G'day folks, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Oliver Brandt, and with me this week are Michael Goncalves.
Hey, paisanos!
Angelo Valdivia.
You stole my welcome.
And Luke Henderson.
Howdy, howdy.
Definitely didn't pre-plan it with Ollie before we started.
We've got a fun little conspiracy going in the background there. We've got a great episode lined up for you, all about a bunch of classic games coming to the Switch, a new Pokemon game, and more. But first, let's talk about the game formerly known as FIFA.
Hey, Paisanos.
After 4 years of legacy editions, which basically just like old versions of FIFA, there was like no new features added. They just like, you know, updated the colors and the roster, and like that was it. The next FIFA game, or, you know, FIFA in quotes, is on Switch is actually going to be new and reasonably close to the version that other consoles have. So it's using Frostbite, just like every other edition is. It's got new features. It's got Volta, which was like added to FIFA in like 2017, 2018.
2019.
2019, there you go. Yep. And women are going to be in it, which is nice.
That's such a weird thing to list as a feature.
Well, I mean, like, most of the games don't have them, so...
EA, yeah. Like, just did a big push out for the FIFA World Cup, which is here in Australia and New Zealand, and in the press release, like, da-da-da-da, and then there's, like, a half font size at the bottom, like, not coming to Switch.
Yeah.
So that, you know, now that it is coming to Switch, they made a big deal for it.
Yeah. It's like finally, I mean, like, for a long time, EA's been like, oh, yeah, no, we don't know if we can get Frostbite working on the Switch, and then they did a game
last Mans year. Mans vs. Zombies, Battle for Neighborhoodville.
Yeah, and that was using Frostbite, and now they've done FIFA as well, except it's not going to be called FIFA.
But they've also got women working on the Switch, which is great.
So. Yeah, I mean, as we know from Ubisoft, it's a lot of effort to animate a woman, so... You know, glad they managed to get that working on the Switch somehow. But yeah, so it's actually not called FIFA anymore. It's called EA Sports Football Club, which is not a great name. That's because the FIFA organization, and you know, you can quote me on this, FIFA is a little bitch. Basically, they were unhappy with the amount of money they were getting from EA, which was like already like a shit ton of money. And then decided to like basically threaten to pull the name from the game. And then EA is like, okay, well, we don't need it. So here we are. Now they have a new name. But because all of the players are like contracted separately from the FIFA organization itself, they still get the likeness and club names and all of that stuff, which all that's different now is it doesn't have the words FIFA on the box.
Well, how strange. A hugely corrupt international corporation completely shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah. Funny how
you're talking about EA or FIFA?
So, I mean, is this going to get anybody to actually pick up FIFA or EA Sports Football Club on the Switch?
No. If I was buying a FIFA game, it wouldn't be on Switch, so.
Yeah, exactly. I'd wait for Game Pass.
I mean, I think, like, ultimately, like, EA doesn't care about, like, the main game experience. They just want people, like, doing, you know, the Ultimate Team stuff.
Yeah.
Which is their gacha microtransaction gambling bullshit.
Not in Belgium. That was in the press release, too.
Yeah.
Ultimate Team is not available in Belgium because they blocked all loot boxes.
And the Netherlands is pushing to have loot boxes and gacha-style stuff banned across all of Europe, so that'll be really interesting for EA when that happens, because it's almost certainly going to happen.
And that's their biggest market for this particular game. Look, I mean, in terms of playing FIFA on the Switch, probably not, no, but that's because I have, you know, a PS5 and an Xbox Series X. If I'm going to play a sports game that's designed to look, you know, to replicate the look of the actual sport, I'll play it on the best platform I have access to. But, you know, if you're a sports fan and you're a soccer fan or a football fan, depending on where you live, and you know you've been hanging for a new proper version, this is fantastic news. Especially because, so I remember it. I got to talk with the developers for FIFA 19 on Switch, and that's the Romanian studio. And there was a feature we put on Vooks from E3 back in the day. And they were so excited about all the additional features they'd put in year on year. And then the next year, they're like, oh, and it's the Legacy Edition. You know, and then the Romanian studio, they got stuck working on the career story crap for the main FIFA games since then. So I don't know if those guys are doing this one, but I just think it's, you know, they put a lot of effort into that last proper release, and, you know, then they got screwed by EA. So, yeah.
I just want to point out as well that when we got sent a review code for, I think it was like FIFA 21.
21 or 22, one of them.
And, well, we got for a couple years in a row, but then, yeah, like, the last one, like, Vuk just, like, linked to the previous year's one and was like, yeah, if you want to know about the game, read this. It was just a single sentence.
Sure, that one, the one that he linked to, like, a 2 out of 5 or something.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like, still, like,
a solid game, but you've played this before.
Yeah. Anyway, when the Switch 2 comes out, maybe we'll get even more things.
I do want to point out, though, Switch is the only version that won't include crossplay. So yep, all the other versions have a version of crossplay, but the PS4 to Xbox One are crossplay only between the generations, and then PS5, Series XS, and PC are crossplay. Switch doesn't get any of that. And the Switch version doesn't have their Hypermotion, which is only for the next gen consoles and PC. And that's their tech that they use to literally record actual matches to get, you know, player feedback. It's like a motion capture suit, but instead of it being one person in a room, it's two teams full of players running across the field for 90 minutes. So I got to learn a lot about that last year, and it's actually kind of impressive tech. The other thing, too, is the fact that, you know, this is now the second game using Frostbite on Switch. So, you know, there's now technically no reason we can't get any Need for Speeds or, you know, I'm not saying we're going to get Dragon Age Dreadwolf when that gets released. We're not going to get that on Switch. But, you know, now that they're big engines there, we might start seeing a few more titles from EA, which would be nice.
I mean, when they have it, like, inevitably do a Dragon Age collection, because they absolutely will.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see it on Switch. I mean, we could theoretically see the Mass Effect Legendary Edition too.
Well, that was built on Unreal Engine 3, so...
Yeah. But it
yeah, doesn't have to do Andromeda. Andromeda uses Frostbite.
Yeah. Andromeda's a good game. People dunked on it, but it's pretty good.
Is it?
Look, it was bad at launch, but, like, now that they've cleaned up, like, the majority of the bugs, like, the story is fine and, like, the gameplay is enjoyable. I enjoyed it.
I mean, I liked it, like, but I liked the Mass Effect series, so I gave it enough of wiggle room to be like, okay, I understand this has problems, but I'm sort of enjoying what it's offering. So
I love the original Mass Effect, and I did not like Andromeda at all. Like, you literally just hang out with, like, one new species in an entire galaxy.
Yeah.
You go to, it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly has its faults. But again, I played, like, the Legendary Edition and then Mass Effect Andromeda, like, immediately afterwards. And I don't think it was, like, that far off in terms of, like, vibes or gameplay or storytelling. So, yeah.
True.
Anyway, let's talk about other old games, but good ones. So, the PlayStation cult favorite game, Tomba, is coming to Switch. So this is a very, very early Metroidvania. In terms of, like, modern Metroidvanias, from the PS1 in 1997. So it's sort of rebuilt in Limited Run Games' Carbon Engine. And it has, like, you know, a new soundtrack, remastered cutscenes, you know, all sorts of quality of life stuff and goodies. Although we won't really hear about those for, like, months, if not years.
Yeah,
the trailer is literally just remastered cutscenes.
Yeah, so I mean, like, it's good that we're seeing the remastered cutscenes, but I would also like to see, like, the actual game. Yeah, so I played Tomba. We had a little bit of discussion about this before we started recording, but I played Tomba as a child, and I remember it being really good, but I don't know if it was good because it was good or if it was good because I was a child and enjoying playing games sort of in general. So I'm really interested to see how it holds up. Yeah, what do people think of this? Are you going to pick up Tomba?
I mean, I have no recollection of this game at all prior to this reveal, so for me, it's a no.
Check it out, but I've also been pretty, like, I don't want to support limited run as much as I can. Like, well, can't, should I say? I don't know, whatever I meant. You know what I mean. Yep. So, I don't know. I'll see what it's like.
Yeah, so I think...
It didn't interest me the last two times that it got released on PS3 and then PS4, so...
I mean, that's fair. But yeah, you're right about, like, limited run games. I very much disagree with how they do things. And people are like, oh yeah, it's going to be, like, way better now that they've got bought out, but it's absolutely not going to be way better
at all. I mean, we'll say... They did put out a thing earlier in the year about how, you know, they're modifying their processes and how they're going to send out updates, you know, 2 months after pre-orders close and 8 months and 5 months and 9 months and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, yeah, that's great. You're saying you're going to change your ways, but, you know, you've had people waiting for, you know, 12, 18 plus months on things and you're not telling them shit. So don't say you're doing things, just actually do them first.
Mm.
See, I think, like, my major issue with, like, limited run and, like, very other, you know, similar things is I think it's, like, fundamentally kind of, like, shitty to, like, sell a product that, like, people cannot possibly know about until, like, months and months and months, if not years after the fact, right? And it's, like, it's not the fact that, like, you know, because, like, pre-orders exist, right? I can go and get, like, pre-order a game that I have no idea what it's going to be like. I can do that with Super Mario Bros. Wonder right now. But like, it's a little bit different here because like once the reviews are out and people have tested it and we know what the game is actually like, we can't just like go buy a copy of it, a physical copy of it from Limited Run Games. Like you have to just take it on faith that this is going to be a good game. It's going to be a good conversion. That's just not good enough.
The interesting thing with these stuff, this one and all the others we'll talk about, is that they are getting digital releases as well. So they're not just physical only, which I think is an amazing thing. If they were physical only, you know, I'd be like, just hell no across the board. But given that some of them are releasing digitally as well, it's like, okay, this actually, you know, picking it up for $30 or $40 on the eShop might be worth it, you know. I will say, though, because Limited Run got bought by Embracer, THQ have done some publishing of some games separately. So the Star Wars games on Switch have all been published on Switch and PS4 on that. They've been published elsewhere. So it's not a common thing, but some other titles do eventually get standard releases later on.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, it being, like, digital as well is good. There are other things. We're not going to talk about everything that LRG announced, but, you know, the new Shantae game, as far as we know so far, is only going to be physical. They've not said anything about any sort of digital version. And then other games as well, tweeted about this just the other day, other games as well are only being done physical by LRG, and then the digital version is being published by a separate publisher.
I think Clockwork is being published by WayForward digitally, but Limited Run are doing the physical, so.
Clockwork?
Yeah.
Clock Tower?
Clock Tower. Which is honestly, another, like,
when I searched Clock thing. Yeah. When I searched Clock in Google trying to find like high-res art for that game, there were so many random games that popped up next to it. I just got mixed up with all these titles.
But yeah. I mean, Clock Tower is an interesting release in its own right. And it's like a massive like cult classic point-and-click adventure mystery game in Japan that has never been localized before. So that's super, super exciting.
Never officially been localized before.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are plenty of fan translations, and some of them are quite good. Yeah. Angeli, tell us about Tomba. You interested?
Nah.
No? That's fair.
Nah.
I mean, I think I'm, like, from a... I don't know. I wouldn't have bought it on, like, PS3. I wasn't aware that it was on PS4, so that's interesting.
Pretty sure it was on I'll double check that. I'm pretty sure it came to PS4.
I think like I don't want to say like a preservation standpoint, but like from the standpoint of like the history of games, right? Seeing these like early games, especially in genres that have become like massively popular now, like Metroidvanias. It's always interesting to see how they hold up and exactly what they were doing, you know, first. because I'm sure that, like, you know, Tomba inspired some of the games that I enjoy the heck out of now, in some degree at least.
Yeah, I mean, let's say I'll move on because we know you want to talk about the next one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was just about to say, right? So, like, Gex. Like, fucking Gex, man. That's the notes that I have. Like, literally the notes that I have for that. So, yeah, the Gex trilogy. So, that's Gex, Gex Enter the Gecko, and Gex 3 Deep Covered Gecko, all coming to modern systems, including the Switch. So, we don't actually know anything about it, beyond this. They gave no details. I think this is also on the Carbon Engine, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's Gex. It's all three Gex games. Which, you know, depending on your relationship with Gex, may or may not be a good thing.
I'm pretty sure we talked about Gex a few episodes ago. I think it came up in discussion. Yeah.
This is a release that I can get behind. I'm into Gex. This is going to be great. But, we were talking about this a little bit earlier. Luke and I were reminiscing because I started looking at some footage of the game of Enter the Gecko. And we came to realize that there are two different versions of this game, apart from the fact that there's the PlayStation version and then there's Gex 64, which has a different title, obviously, because it's Gex 64 rather than Gex. In Europe, or at least in England and stuff like that, there was an actual like British English voice actor who voiced Gex, and in the US there's just a straight normal American accent dude. And watching the footage of the gameplay that I saw, it had the American one, and the new trailer features the American one, and it was very jarring for me because I only remember Gex as having British accent because he's supposed to be a parody of James Bond. So,
yeah,
very, very. I mean, odd.
Like, I think I remember playing at least two of the Gex games when I was a child. I have really fond memories of the like first one, which was like a sort of 2D side scroller one. Really, really interesting game. The N64 version, not quite so much. It was not a great game.
I love it. Then, I love it so good. I hired it multiple times. And a friend of mine had it on PlayStation. And I remember watching him play it on PlayStation. And I was just like, oh, this looks so ugly on PSX. That's just a weird memory that I have.
I have zero connection with this game whatsoever. I think, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was one of those games that came out later in life on like an Uncle Toby's Cornflakes like CD. At some point for free for PC. Yeah. Real memory I have for that game. I don't think I interacted with it as a kid at all.
I don't recall that. But like it was just like that peak 3D mascot platformer era game. And the fun thing about this game was that like it was constantly riffing on movies. That's the whole point of at least Enter the Gecko.
Yeah.
Is that every stage is just based on a film and you jump into television sets that, you know, feature this film featuring a level that parody a certain film, like there's Scream. There's a whole like cartoon, like a sort of like a Looney Tunes type thing as well. And you know, it's just kind of like those platforming games where you just go around collecting all sorts of items and fighting some lame
basically
bosses.
A PG parody version of the last few moments of my couple of levels of Conker. Where Conker parodied a bunch of things, but this is, the PG version of that.
Yeah, but it was always referencing that, it was referencing like pop culture and cracking jokes and things like that as well, which made it kind of fun.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure, just from memory, I think the first one did that as well, to a lesser extent, obviously, because it was, much less involved than the later games. But it definitely featured like genre parodies and a lot of wisecracks that were very clearly referring to certain movies and stuff.
Well, even the trailer is just a straight up riff of GoldenEye 64, like to the point where the font is the same as GoldenEye's.
I mean, I'll be honest, when it popped up, my first thought was when I saw that font was that LIG were just going to be doing prints of the GoldenEye game for Xbox and that just came out at the start of the year. because that's the stuff they tend to do, is they tend to just, you know, do physical editions of games that already exist, so.
To be on the Gex logo, is it meant to be the barrel of a gun? It looks like a remote control. I can't really tell.
It's a remote control.
Yeah.
It's a remote control.
Like get into levels.
Because he jumps into television sets.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
But I think it's supposed to look like a silencer as well. Like it.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah,
I clearly know this game.
I mean, that's one way to turn down the volume.
I'll probably pick this one up.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to pick this one up. I don't know. I'm fully prepared for it to be just like a terrible, terrible game. But I don't care.
Well, that's the big thing with the Carbon Engine is it's
just
not
terrible games.
Depending on who you ask, but it's not a straight emulator. It's where they sort of bring in a whole bunch of stuff and they tweak settings and all that. It's not just making it playable on modern platforms like the Nintendo 64 Switch app does. But, you know, they actually tweak the actual games to make them play and all that. And they sort of enhance them, if you will. So they are emulated, but they're like enhanced emulation. So that's why, you know, we don't get everything just dumped on this engine. They do take their time with certain things. But, yeah, it should be fun to play. And again, you know, it is going to be digital as well if, you know, you don't want to spend $75 and then wait 12 months for the physical release.
Yeah, which is absolutely going to happen.
Yeah.
But again, we don't know when this is coming out. So this could be like, you know, this could come out digitally like next month, or it could come, you know, late 2024. It's the most frustrating part of LRG's stuff, apart from the fact that they're kind of a shady company, is that like you never know.
I'm a Star Wars guy. People probably know that about me, and if they don't, I'm a Star Wars guy. So I bought the collector's editions, not the fancy ones, but the mid ones of all the Star Wars games on Switch from them. And I ordered The Force Unleashed last year in April, and it's now July. It's, you know, 14, 15 months, and I'm still waiting. It still hasn't shipped. But in that time, they managed to create a standard edition cartridge release, then a VHS box, and take it to conventions and start selling it. Something that they had never mentioned they were doing as part of their pre-order stuff. Just out of nowhere, they decided to do this. So when I emailed them and I basically ripped them a new one for, you know, deceiving their customers, they offered me a full one-time only refund of my order. Like, you can't get a refund from LRG. That's almost impossible. So when they offered that, I was like, okay, great. But, you know, that still doesn't solve the problem, the fact that I haven't got what I wanted. So, yeah, they are definitely shady. And even, Michael will back me up on this, even when they do actually ship things out and send them out, you know, the quality is also weird. Like, the Monkey Island stuff, they printed the game, the list of games in the wrong goddamn order on the box.
Still so dark about it. So dark.
In the actual, like, the promotional stuff about, hey, we're doing this collection, it's in the right order. At some point between the prototype mock-up box and the actual one that went to print, they messed up the order and nobody thought, we should probably correct that. They just left it as is. So
it really speaks to their attention to detail of their releases, which is, you know, obviously not great.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gex. Everyone get excited. It's Gex.
Gex excited?
So another LRG thing. They were basically the only ones like announcing anything in the past fortnight. So that's basically all we're going to talk about.
Annapurna had a showcase as well, but we didn't cover that at all. So
yeah, they're bringing the Jurassic Park Classic Games Collection to Switch and everything else. It's all two of the classic games. There's Jurassic Park and Jurassic Park 2, The Chaos Continues. And it'll include the NES, Game Boy, and Super Nintendo versions of both of those games. What's interesting is that you can get like actual cartridges of those all of those platforms and all of those games too, which is pretty exciting. But man, I loved the first Jurassic Park game on the Super Nintendo, because I rented that so many times. Wonderful game.
But yeah. Oliver, like, you haven't addressed, like, what is Jurassic... What? I don't recall a film being called Jurassic Park 2, The Chaos Continues.
So, yeah, so, Jurassic Park
2. Not prepared for the full name drop then, Oliver? I was like, what?
The Chaos Continues is a sequel to the first game, the first Jurassic Park game on the Super Nintendo, and everything else, I guess. But it's not based on Jurassic Park 2, the movie. It's just
what?
It's just a weird, like, alternate reality sequel.
So this is the Jurassic Park multiverse.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty keen for this.
Am I wrong? Did anyone who's asking for this? Like,
yeah, I mean, like
the game is fine, I guess. I don't think there's rabid fans of the Jurassic Park games, as far as I'm aware of. Other games that we've talked about, I understand. Like, I get it. This one, I'm just like, what?
It seems to me like there must be like an eBay for like classic games rights, and LRG is just constantly F5ing the page, being like, oh, okay, cool. The Jurassic Park is on the cheap. Let's get that.
That'd be amazing.
But I mean, like, when I can't even remember what the name of the game was. There was a game that came out that was like a park management, a Jurassic Park management game, kind of recently.
Jurassic Park Evolution.
Oh, yeah.
Jurassic World Evolution 2.
Jurassic World Evolution, sorry.
And then when that came out, people were like, wow, they should give us the Super Nintendo one. Which I guess, like...
Yeah, one random guy on Twitter put that back in the comments, and now here we are.
Someone at LRG is like, great idea! add it to the list!
Could you imagine if they get the release order of this collection wrong? Put the second game first?
Oh my god.
So what's interesting is Jurassic Park... So just the first original series. There's a Game Boy game, an NES game, a Mega Drive game, a Super Nintendo game, a Game Gear game, and another version. And that doesn't account for like the Telltale Games Jurassic Park title that released like 25 years after the movie. Probably 20 years after the movie. It's been a while for that one. So yeah, there's just all sorts of weird things. And none of the games are remotely similar to each other except the NES and Game Boy ones. Basically the same game, just, you know, with less colors.
To be fair, it's the same with Star Wars, though. For a good 25 years, we just had all sorts of weird Star Wars games. All about different things that were disconnected.
Who remembers Luke running across the sands of Tatooine after his aunt and uncle were burnt to a crisp, fighting scorpions with his lightsaber?
I have a distinct memory of that.
in the cinemas or on the console?
Yeah, that was in the original cinematic release, and then, you know, George Lucas went weird in the edits.
Yeah, that sounds like him.
Bring back the practical scorpion effects.
I will say this Jurassic Park thing, like, again, they're doing the games digitally, which is great. I mean, we've been pretty spoiled over the past few years with some of these digital, you know, collections of classic games. But I have to ask, you know, so I don't know if you guys have seen it, but the Prehistoric Edition is for Switch, PS4, and Xbox One. It comes with a physical copy of the collection, a steelbook, packaging inspired by the original Jurassic Park VHS case, a replica of Dr. Alan Grant's ID card inspired by the Jurassic Park game. Not the movie, because he never had an ID card in the movie, by the game. The physical CD soundtrack featuring original music from the Jurassic Park Classic Games collection. Mini replicas of the original Jurassic Park NES, Game Boy, and Super NES game cartridges in a custom display frame, and packaging inspired by the classic Jurassic Park toys for $175 plus shipping.
It doesn't feel worth it, because that's like, what, like $240 here?
A little bit more than that, but yeah. And then when we're shipping, which is usually $30, $40 for a standard thing,
yeah,
you know, once you add this giant box, it's probably another $100.
Yeah, so you're paying like $350 or more. Yeah, go on.
I'll bet there are like five people on the Aussie Games Bargains Facebook page who are going absolutely nuts for this collection. I guarantee it.
I mean, there will almost certainly be people who listen to this podcast and they're like, yeah, this sounds like exactly my kind of thing. I'm ready to drop $350 on this right now.
We'd like to let you know that you're wrong.
Look, Godspeed, considering there are people on this podcast who have spent $400 on a second Switch, so... 400, 500 bucks.
I will say there is somebody in
the Facebook. I feel attacked.
There was somebody in the Facebook comments when Rich posted the story about this. He's like, he tagged us somebody else who I don't know both of them. And he's like, oh, he goes, I can't believe these prices. He goes, you're still going to get it, right? He goes, yeah, I'm still going to get it because he's a massive Jurassic Park game fan. He collects them all.
Oh, my God. Okay.
What's really cool is in the collector's edition, so not the prehistoric edition, not the classic edition, but the collector's edition, you can get either a physical copy of either Jurassic Park or Jurassic Park 2, Part 2, The Chaos Continues, on an amber light-up retro cartridge. So it's a cartridge for the console that will light up when you plug it in, which I think that is kind of cool. But I wouldn't pay $100 for one of them. Because if you want both, you've got to pay $200.
I think the life lesson we're learning here is that nerds have way too much money.
Oh, yeah.
And disposable. Don't get me wrong. I'm definitely one of those dumb nerds that's bought some dumb shit. Like, I bought the Monkey Island Collector's Edition. I'm going to say it right now. But at least that has an insanely huge fan base, and people that love that game and will, like, do murders for it, including myself. This I just don't understand, like, at all.
Yeah,
like,
that's a difference though, right? It's like people would have been asking for the Monkey Island one. Who's asking for Chex Notes, Jurassic Park 2, The Chaos Continues?
It's just odd.
We have to mention too that this collection, the games they've announced, they didn't say this is the only games, but there are obviously, you know, dozens of other titles. There's a whole bunch of Mega Drive games. There's Jurassic Park, the Lost World titles. There's, you know, not Jurassic Park Part 2, but Jurassic World 2. Sorry, Jurassic Park 2. So there's a whole bunch of other games that aren't being included so far. It's like, so, you know, are we getting these, or are we going to have to, you know, deal with the Jurassic Park Classic Games Collection 2 3 years from now? That's the thing.
At the end of the day, you're pre-ordering on the information that you know, so.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing too. But I have to call this out. The very first Jurassic Park game that let you build your own park was on the Game Boy Advance.
Sure was.
And it was tied to the worst movie in the series, Jurassic Park 3.
I like
them all, but
the Spinosaurus has a telephone in its belly.
I remember watching that in the cinema, and I turned to my friend, like, when they had the phone. I said to him, I bet you a dinosaur's going to eat that someone with that phone. And then later in the film, you're going to hear that phone, and it's going to signal the coming of a dinosaur. And bing, bada, boom, that happens. And I'm like, I'm done with this film.
Yeah. How did you know? I heard your phone, that crappy ringtone. And then the camera just pans around. It's like, how did a giant, massive dinosaur that every time it walks anywhere, you feel it stomping and you hear it, sneak up on people in a giant, empty field?
No, the biggest mystery is how that child was collecting dinosaur pee and then drinking it.
I mean, we don't know he was drinking it, but just the fact that he collected it.
No, he was. I believe he was drinking it. And then he'd do a quick job on the spot and then sweat it out, and he'd smell like T-Rex pee.
I feel like this is going to be a classic bookcast moment where someone snippets Angelo believing that a child is drinking dino pee.
All right, let's move on. Because, you know, I don't think we should necessarily talk about bodily functions. Although, you know, the next one, maybe. Pokemon Sleep. It was announced... a while back, a long while back, like 4 years ago, and then they didn't really talk about it for 4 years, and now it's out now, but it had a beta last week, or earlier this week, I don't know.
Well, this has
been on holidays.
This has been in development for almost as long as Tears of the Kingdom, right? So it's gonna be another god tier game, right?
It's... You know, as I have in the notes here, it's a sleep tracker. It's very good at that. In the sense that, like, it knows when you went to sleep and when you woke up. And that's about it. It can also tell if you, like, snore and stuff. And it'll, like, give you, like, stats about your sleep. And you can, like, compete with your friends to see who can sleep the most. Which is a weird thing to do, but... It just...
Sorry, that flew by me. You can compete with friends to...
Yeah, so you add friends, and then whoever gets the highest sleep score, like, can get rewards and stuff on your friends list. So you compete with your friends to see who can sleep the most. Now, I think quality of sleep is important as well, but I'm not 100% sure because nobody would add me during the beta period. So
if I put myself in a coffin and bury myself and die, do I win? Is that how it works?
I mean, is that
quality sleep?
Well, I mean, like it knows. I mean, basically, all it can do is like movement and sound. That's the only sort of, you know, inputs that it has. Because you have to put it on your bed next to your pillow, and it'll like detect your sounds and you know, the movement.
I want to see this in next year's games done quick.
Well, I mean, the minimum
sleeping on Twitch is a thing.
The minimum sleep that you can do is 90 minutes, so it'll be at least 90 minutes long.
Who's developing this game? Is it?
It's
Niantic are helping. I know that.
Yeah, Niantic are helping. I think it's basically like a fucking Pokemon Company special. It's like a bunch.
Is this one of the? Like, what's the privacy policy on this game? I feel like this is going to be a data mining nightmare.
Okay, so the data doesn't, like, get stored in servers or anything. Your sleep score gets sent to friends and stuff, but, like, the actual sleep data is all stored within the app.
Okay, that's good.
It doesn't pull data from anywhere else, so, like, your Google Fit or Apple Health or whatever, and it can't transmit data to those either, so...
Look, I want to argue that, like, this isn't safe, because it's basically collating like children's sleep data. But then I thought about it realistically for half a second and realized it's just going to be 35-year-old dude, so it'd go nuts.
I mean, I draw the line at, you know, putting my phone next to my head while I'm asleep. You know, these phones, you know, break from the slightest touch. I don't want to like faceplant my phone in the middle of a, you know, deep sleep and then wake up in the morning to find it cracked and my face covered in shards of glass.
I mean, are you going to headbutt it in your sleep?
I mean, some people get really, really violent when they're asleep. You know, they kick the pillows off the bed and they, you know, punch and all that sort of stuff. So who knows what will happen.
You just pick it up and you just start snapping it over your head. As shards of glass rain down on your face.
He just chews on it in his sleep.
I have been testing this out for a little bit. It's like, yeah, it's fine. It's very cute. You like can, you know, make a little curry for your Snorlax friend and he eats it up and... I don't know what that does, because at the end of the day, it's still just, like, tracking your sleep.
That's such a sentence. You can make a little curry for your Snorlax friend.
Yeah.
Hold on. Please tell me that, at the very least, that in order to wake... Does this app wake you up? Does it play music on a poker flute to wake you up?
Okay, so, yes, it does.
Okay, thank God, because...
So It wakes you up. It has its alarm system. You can put your own song in if you want, but like, why would you? But you can also ask it to play you calming music while you sleep, and it plays the Pokemon Center theme on a Poke flute.
Make or break for Angelo. Does it play the Pokemon flute song? Otherwise, trash this app. Put it in the bin.
It has a Snorlax in like the screenshots and stuff. And in the original game, like you wake the damn thing up with a poker flute. It's like, it makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
I just love if the calming music changed halfway through and like to Lavender Town or something, just to like really mess with people as they're dozing off.
Maybe. I don't know, I'm usually asleep by then, so...
The trailer has a really cute sleeping Charmander, and that's enough for me. Yeah, so
that's sort of the main draw of it, is that, like, depending on how well you sleep, how long you sleep for, you know, all sorts of things, you get, like, different Pokemon that show up, and they all have, like, very cute sleeping animations, and there's, like, 200 different, like, different things to collect, so, you know, some nights... There will be people who, like, especially people who have to cover this game, like Joe Merrick over on Serbi, who will, like, have to, like, intentionally have a rough night's sleep so that they can unlock other Pokemon, which is very silly to me. But, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, it's a free sleep tracker. You can... There is microtransactions because it's a mobile game in 2023. So you can pay for, like...
Better sleep?
No, you can pay for boosts that mean, like, more Pokemon turn up in the morning after you wake up. And also, like, there's a battle pass.
You're kidding.
It's not really a battle pass. It's a monthly subscription. a weekly.
Oh, that's even worse.
Monthly. It's a monthly subscription, and you pay, I think it's like $6 a month, and it basically just like gives you some free stuff and like also lets you see beyond 30 days of sleep tracking. So like normally you can only see the past 30 days. But yeah.
I'm really curious about how I was sleeping 14 years ago.
Nerds have too much money.
The other thing is that you can spend $80 Australian to get the Pokemon Go Plus Plus, which is a sleep tracker.
I wanted to bring this up because it's called Pokemon Go Plus Plus.
Yeah, because there's already a Pokemon Go Plus, and then this is a better version of that, so it's the Pokemon Go Plus Plus.
That mean that, like when the third one comes out, it's going to be Pokemon Go Sharp?
Maybe.
That's a programming joke.
So that one basically, so the way that Pokemon Sleep works now is that like you have to leave your phone unlocked and then place it face down on your bed next to you. And then like the screen will turn off when you turn your phone over. But it's still, you know, unlocked, which is annoying for me because I get my notifications on my smartwatch and it doesn't do that if my screen is unlocked. But
it's an issue if you're asleep.
Well, no, because like sometimes I need to be woken from sleep from like notifications from my boss or whatever. So, you know, if I'm having a nap, if I'm like actually just getting sleep, I'll just turn my notifications off because like, you know, I don't want my boss talking to me when I'm trying to sleep. Boundaries, man.
How dare they?
But, but you don't have to have your app open or anything with the Pokemon Go Plus Plus. It does all the sleep tracking stuff just without the app at all. If you want to see the data, obviously you have to connect it to the app. That's $80. And it also works as a Pokemon Go Plus for Pokemon Go purposes, so it'll automatically catch stuff and spin Pokestops and stuff for you as well. So, you can play even less of that game.
It's been a slow news fortnight, that's for sure.
Yeah, it sure has. There really has not been much going on at all.
It's that time of year. You know, it's always quiet this time of year, so.
I mean, if we want to stray away from Nintendo for a little bit, I mean, there's been Microsoft, Activision, Blizzard stuff going on.
I
think it's probably going to close tomorrow or day after, I guess.
Yeah, probably. It sort of depends on what the CMA does. But we'll see how it goes. There's a very good likelihood that Activision, Blizzard, and Microsoft just like close over the CMA without having come to a resolution yet. But the FTC can't do shit anymore, so yeah.
Well, I like that they got their first attempt to block the injunction rejected, which ironically was done by the same judge who told them they couldn't have it in the first place. And then they went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they also rejected it, so.
Well, what's funny is that they brought it to the Ninth Circuit of Appeals with, like, a 5-hour time limit, because it needed to be done. And it's like, well, they're not going to just, like, say yes. They don't barely have time to read it. They're just going to be like, oh, yeah, no, the other judges did their job. But, yeah.
I mean, let's face it, courts are not known for expediency, so.
No. If you're going to, like, demand that they do something in 5 hours, they're not going to, you know, rule in your favor. There's been no other news outside of that.
when a country like Turkey and Saudi Arabia approve your acquisition deal, and then the UK is the only one that said no, you're like...
That's the thing, right? It's like there are 41 countries that have approved this. New Zealand hasn't yet. Australia is still provisionally passed it. But like basically every other country that matters has passed this, and then the UK is like, oh, well, you know... What if Microsoft has a cloud gaming monopoly? And it's like, well, you know, what if Sony gets a unicorn monopoly? Nobody gives a shit about cloud gaming. It's just like, it's the weirdest thing. Like, no, like it's not going to be a thing. Like, cloud gaming is never going to be, like, gigantic, right? It's going to be, like, this fringe thing that some people do to try out a game every now and then.
But even the fact that that exists, like, people do... play cloud gaming, like even I like lie in bed with my Steam Deck and I play Game Pass games like over the cloud. So it's not that my preferred way to do it, but like it's there. Like I think it's fine as like an alternative backup plan to playing things. Mm. And, you know,
yeah, but it's always going to be a backup plan. Like it's never going to be a major market, which is
no, absolutely. And I think that's fine. And I think that's why like the CMA taking the whole like monopoly over cloud gaming thing so seriously, quite comical.
Yeah, it's because it's just stupid. Like, it's not, like, you know, we've already seen, like, Google try to do it and that didn't work out. Amazon's got its streaming platform.
When the CMA were like, cloud gaming's big, it's like, hang on. Google's one of the largest tech companies in the world. If they couldn't get cloud gaming to function, what the hell do you think that Joe Blow's discount cloud gaming service is going to do 5 years from now?
Yeah.
Like, come on. I mean, I got their argument on what they were trying to do, but it's like you can't pull out that, you know, it's going to be big when, you know, there are four major tech firms in the world, being Google, Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon, and one of them has abandoned it, one of them has it and doesn't grow it, one of them doesn't bother with it, and the other one's like, yeah, sure, but, you know, it's just a bonus. You can't just get cloud gaming on its own subscription level.
Yep. Yeah.
Stupid.
But my favorite part of study, we're just going, like, off topic now because there's nothing else to talk about.
I mean, we do that all the time, so.
Yeah.
We're on brand at least.
But yeah, my favorite thing about Stadia in general, is it Stadia or Stadia? I don't think
Stadia.
Stadia makes more sense because it's like the plural of stadium. But yeah, so Stadia, my favorite thing is like in the announcement of that, they did this like YouTube stream because obviously it's Google, they did a YouTube stream and they were like, oh yeah, leveraging like YouTube's like flawless video streaming technology. And like while they were saying that, like the YouTube stream was like fucking up. And it was just like the funniest thing because you just like you'd look over to Twitter and everybody's like laughing at Google for like saying that like they're using this flawless technology that is like in the midst of breaking.
You guys remember when Elon Musk was unveiling the Cybertruck and he was talking about his bulletproof glass and threw a ball at it and it smashed.
So good. That was gonna be amazing.
Oh, that was six years ago. Been a while since that thing happened, right?
It was like 2019.
Yeah, long time.
2019. Yeah.
The first truck has just finished being made, just like over the last day or so.
Well, it'll never get approval in most of the countries.
No.
You say that like it's incredible. Well, she was talking about a Pokemon sleeping app that took 5 years to make. So
no, that's my point. It's like
here's the thing, right?
It took far too long.
If it takes like 4 years to make a sleep tracking app with Pokemon in it, like, do you trust a car that's been developed in that long? Because I certainly don't.
I wouldn't trust a car designed by that nut job anyway.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, like, it's not going to pass any sort of regulation in any country that matters. Like, it's just going to be like, oh yeah, the US and like Kazakhstan can have Cybertrucks. I think that's going to be it.
Poor Kazakhstan.
Yeah. Sorry, I just.
Throw
the
ropes.
The countries that have Fahrenheit as their temperature system. Yeah. I will say though that the whole thing with Microsoft is when the FTC in that court case, they kept trying to bring the Switch into the argument about how the Switch is a platform, and then they're like, but it's not a major platform, and it's like, well, considering Switch outsold all the Xbox stuff, I'd probably consider the Xbox to be the underdog in that scenario. But I do find it funny. They kept saying Switch, Switch, Switch. It's like, yeah, but you know, less than 12 months from now, we probably will be on another version of Nintendo hardware that won't be the Switch.
Oh, so. God, I hope so. But
yeah.
Well, the reason why they kept bringing up the Switch is because they needed to define Nintendo's place in the industry, because otherwise the court case definition of the games industry was Sony versus Microsoft.
But yeah.
Microsoft was trying to argue that Nintendo was also a player in the mix, and because Nintendo is so different in terms of like the audience and the technology that they use, they're like, so where does Nintendo fit in that very small spectrum of gaming?
Yeah.
Obviously, they did a closed deposition on somebody from Nintendo of America, and I was very upset that was a closed deposition, because we got some great, you know, tidbits of information from
the Epic V,
the Apple Epic one. But I was gonna say Jack Ryan, but that's the Tom Clancy character. Jim Ryan. His name now. That's it. We got some great information from him, but everything Nintendo presented was
okay. But we didn't closed. Necessarily get good information from Sony. We got good information from whoever used a Sharpie to redact documents before they scanned it in, which is how we know that like The Last of Us.
Right.
Costs like $200 million to make, which
that's the game, people, not the TV show.
Anyway, that was a fun chat about non-Nintendo things. I appreciate, Luke, that you tried to bring it back to Nintendo towards the end there, but now we're talking about The Last of Us, so...
Mm-hmm. You know. I mean, it got a lot of Emmy nominations, the TV show.
It did. And I don't think it deserves all of them.
Now it's been delayed as well, the second season, because of the writer's strike and the Screen Actors Guild strike.
Yeah, which good
which,
for
you
them.
Know, good on them. Pro-union, yep. Live the dream. But also solidarity. I'm sad.
Yeah. But, yeah. Are there any other topics we want to talk about before we actually get back to the real podcast? Or,
I mean, yeah. I thought we were going to talk about pricing. And I was going to bring up a pricing.
Yeah, that feature discussion's been there since 1964. I think it's a meme now.
Since 10 years before video games existed.
I mean, yeah, let's talk about pricing. So
I just my specific thing that I got from that was I wanted to bring up the whole the whole early access release thing. Not early access like we talked about a few weeks ago. Angelo's telling me to talk to the hand.
There we go. No, I was trying to get my focus to work.
Sorry, so you know, having a stroke. Games have that, $99.95 releases on September 5, but if you pay an extra $30, you get it 3 days early. That crap.
Oh, man.
I honestly wonder who in their right mind thought that was a great business decision, because there's so many people doing that now. Like Starfield has it.
That's why it's a great idea. Because people are spending the money.
Yeah, so this is the thing, right? Sega sort of started it. I didn't really notice it before Sega started doing it. I don't know if Sega was the first, but Sega is the first big one that I can think of. And they started doing it with, I think the first one was Persona 5 Royal, and then they started rolling it out to other games as well. And then
no, it's been around something longer than Persona 5.
Oh, yeah, something like 2012 or 2013 is when I remember it happening.
Yeah, it would have been a couple of Call of Duties, done it? Yeah, for sure.
I think it's a Call of Duty.
In any case, it is super shady, because basically the whole point of that is that
Battlefield, maybe?
I think it was a Medal of Honor.
Yeah, Warfare
or something like that. It was an EA thing. Anyway, sorry.
Could be. Yeah, the whole point of this strategy is that they want you to they want the social media conversation to be happening and then you to regret not buying the more expensive version.
Oh, it's 100% FOMO. It's driven by FOMO so bad.
It's purely just FOMO. They are capitalizing very literally on FOMO. And just that's just the shadiest thing ever. I think it's just the worst.
But also people just to be able to get in early and level up as fast as they can in online multiplayer and just cream.
So,
Then all the companies just use it to beta test all the online services anyway, because the experience is always horrible on the first few days.
Yeah. We saw it with Diablo 4, right? They did the 3 days, 4 days early access. They also ran a competition where it's you get your name on a statue in Blizzard headquarters, and I think that people got other things as well. If you're one of the first 100 players to reach 100 on level 100 on hardcore mode, but they started counting from when the early access players started doing it. So it's if you want to be part of this competition, you have to pay the extra $70 to get the ultimate edition. It's becoming so much more common, and I feel we're getting to a point where people are going to start playing $100 for a month early, because first it was just you get to play it the day before, and then other things started moving it out to a week or whatever, and I feel eventually we're just we have some early access things where people are playing it months and months and months in advance before it goes free to play or whatever.
Disney Speedstorm is one of those things.
Yeah.
The other thing too is with the and I'm calling out on this. Ubisoft are the biggest bunch of twats for it. The regular edition, and then there's the gold edition, and then there's the EB Games exclusive edition, and the JB exclusive edition. You know, with all this extra content that's exclusive to depending on where you buy it from.
Yeah.
And then who was it? Yahtzee from Zero Punctuation
Ben
years
Crozier.
Ago. Yeah, him. When he did his Spider-Man review, he talked about how if you bought the digital deluxe edition, whatever it was called, you got three extra missions. It's now, you know, you're not getting the full experience if you buy the regular edition because there's extra missions they've made. It's not like, you know, they put an extra piece of art somewhere in the world. It's like, you know, there's actual dialogue and events. Well,
they're doing that with console exclusives. Sorry, not console exclusives. Like console version, certain console platform editions of games, like yeah, to have yeah exclusive content. And I'm like, that's just so irritating.
Well, I mean, it's like one of those things, like Watch Dogs, for example. Like Watch Dogs was the big one that like people started like pulling out the spreadsheets for. And like it was like you had to buy like five editions across like three different platforms in order to like get all of the content that was in all versions of the game just locked off unless you bought those specific editions on those specific platforms. And like that kind of like pre-order nonsense. It's like, you know, Nintendo is like very much behind the times, but they don't do that shit.
My favorite collector's editions are the $300 ones that don't come with the game.
I genuinely think it's a good idea. I will die on that hill. So this is actually like super, super common in Japan. You will never get a collector's edition that has the game in it in Japan. And I think that's a good thing because like if you just want the stuff, you can get it. If you want the stuff and then you can buy the physical game as well, you can do that. Or you could get the stuff and buy it digitally so you don't have to wait for the stuff to come in to, you know, play the game. I think like there is no world in which having the collector's edition stuff sold separately from the game offers less choice, right? Like it's just more choice. You can buy the game physically, you can buy the game digitally. It's ultimately a good thing, and I don't see how anyone.
I'm confused by that sentiment because you still have choice by buying the game and then buying the collector's edition with the game.
Yeah, what I'm saying, right,
is why that would be better.
If you sell the collector's edition separately from any game, right, it doesn't matter how else you buy the game. You can buy it on launch day. You can wait 2 months to get it pre-owned. You can buy it digitally. You can buy it physically. Whatever, right? If it comes with the game, you don't have that choice anymore. You have to get the game physically. And I think, like, if for people like me, like, I have the both next-gen consoles that I have don't have a disc drive. Why am I paying, like, an extra $60 to have the game included for a collector's edition? I mean, I don't buy collector's editions anyway, but if I did, right, what would be the point in that?
Well, so, I mean, like, what's the point of having the collector's edition anyway? It's just to have it on your shelf, and, like, you might as well have the game disc there as well.
Well, yeah, but, like, again, it just offers more choice to not include the game in it, because then you can pick up the game.
I get it from a consumer choice point of view, but at the same time, it's like they should do it both ways. One should be like the full package with all the crap that they're bundling in and the game, and then one should so be just
you said full package. I just for some reason just went to Duke Nukem. I'm like trying to imagine what the full package in terms of innuendo that would look like. Sorry, please go on.
The other thing too is like this is something I've thought of for years, but you know when you buy a collector's edition, you know you get the Xbox version or the PlayStation version or the PC version, and they all come with their things. It's like I'm sort of at the point now where it should just be a code in a box, and you go to a website, put the code in, and it says, "Hey, what version do you want?" And you just, "Hey, I need PlayStation 5," and they give you a code for the PS5, right? Or they link it to your account. I think that would be just a way to cut down on things. But I'm saying, like I years ago I used to get collector's editions and then they just started upping the price and becoming ridiculous for no reason. Like they did that Gotham Knights one last year. Oh, there's a reason. No. When I say upping the price for no reason, I mean the quality and value didn't increase. They just upped the price. But that Gotham Knights one last year came with, you know, a statue of all four playable characters. And they're not the best looking statues quality wise. And of course the game is a piece of shit. So It's like, who wants to spend $500 on that? All right, I don't know. Just another thing that's just annoying me about the industry.
Who's getting the Starfield watch?
I know you kind of want it, but it's not going to have any function there for me.
That's the thing. It doesn't actually do half the stuff that, you know, an Android watch would do. And I guarantee you, I already saw somebody's done it. I guarantee you somebody would actually make a proper version, you know, by the time the game comes out, not a half-baked visual front end. So, yeah.
You guys remember that Call of Duty edition that came with the night vision goggles? It's like, this is way too expensive for a game collector's edition, but it's also way too cheap for a set of night vision goggles.
I was working at JB when that came out. That sold like crazy.
So Call of Duty was the first one to do a big collector's edition thing. and it was a whiskey, the stainless steel whiskey things, as one of those, and had like the Call of Duty logo engraved in it. They weren't the first to do extra things. Like I remember Oblivion had came with a coin and a map and stuff like that.
I remember that.
But the Call of Duty, the World War, Vietnam World War, was it just called World War?
World at War.
World at War, that's it. That was the first one to do like a special edition thing. So Call of Duty, you know, was the first to kick all this crap off.
I remember Halo 3 came with the helmet, and that was 2007.
World War was
helmet that you couldn't actually put on a person. You had to, you know, it was only big enough to like put on your cat. So people were just taking photos of their cats with the Master Chief helmet on it.
Well, because it was designed to sit over that little stump, and the stump was designed to hold Halo 1, 2, and 3.
So good.
But yeah, I don't know. I just
think it was that Call of Duty that had a remote control car.
Well, there was Arkham Knight. Remember Arkham Knight was supposed to come out with that big collector's edition that had the remote control Batmobile, and it never released because the Batmobile kept breaking in their testing, so they couldn't actually produce it. So there's like a handful of them that actually exist in the world because they were the prototype ones.
It's almost as if nerds have too much money.
That's the subtitle about, like, for the episode. The Fallout 4, like, Pip-Boy edition that, like, people lost their minds over.
Dude, that was just a giant plastic bucket on your wrist. And everyone's like, my God.
That's
the one. It had the app and you could do it. It connected to the game and everything. It's just...
Was it Fallout 4 or Fallout 76 that came with that giant plastic bag that was supposed to be canvas?
That was 76.
Like I say, I make fun of this, but then I was one of those guys who went out and bought that tiny little remote control BB-8 thing that can... that connects to your phone and literally does nothing. Like
the Sphero ball.
I'm one of those people that Sphero sent me all those, so hotness. I didn't actually pay for them.
That was the hotness in like Christmas 2015, and I was like, oh my God, I gotta get one. And then I played with it for like 10 seconds. I'm like,
around the same year, I think a little bit earlier, I can't remember if it was also Sphero. I think it was Sphero that also did it as well. They had a car's
like Lightning McQueen
car. But, like, the mouth moved on it, like Lightning McQueen, and it was actually incredible. Like, it was cool to see it, like, work. It was the coolest thing that they've done, like, especially comparative to the ball. Like, the ball is just boring.
About a year after the Lightning McQueen, they also dropped a, basically, the... Sorry, let me mute it so it doesn't turn in. The Alexa, but it was in Spider-Man form. So it was a remote control...
You just put your hand over Alexa to hush her. You're like,
I muted the thing so she didn't like pop up. But yeah, it was a like an actual like
sleep.
Talking about you, not to you. But yeah, it was basically just a Spider-Man doll that would act like an Alexa. So they did that, and then that didn't sell because it was like $370 here. It was ridiculous. And then all the droids they made for Star Wars didn't sell, so they went, hey, we're not doing any of this anymore. We're going back to pure education. And the company sort of faded into obscurity. They're still around, but, you know, they just focus all on education, so.
How long have we been recording this episode for?
Oh, I don't know. Time is not real, so it doesn't matter.
I want to call it, too.
It says the recording started an hour ago.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate that is.
Yeah, I don't think it's accurate at all.
So an hour and a little bit. Fine.
Yeah, we're fine. I just want to call that too. In the run sheet that Ollie has here, he's left it in since like February about the big releases coming out in the month. He's not taking that out at all.
I thought you were going to talk about the Pragana Nananat.
I just saw that get highlighted. I've seen it like three times in the past few days on Instagram. It keeps popping up for me.
Oh, I love it.
But in that list at the bottom of it, I pulled a big list together at the start of the year for everything that you can play on Switch in the first 6 months. I've just done another one for the back half of the year. So if you're interested in seeing everything that's there from Nintendo, third parties, and indies. Not every single game, because, you know, screw that. The list would be ginormous. But, you know, sort of the bigger ones, the ones that you should pay attention to.
You should put that in the show notes.
That'll be in
the show notes, yeah. Did you put Silk Song there?
No, because I only put games that have a release window.
Also, only games that are real, obviously.
Look, we're all thinking it.
All right, let's talk about the games that we're playing. Otherwise, we'll just talk shit for like the next 2 hours and then we'll run out of upload space.
I feel like that's the only reason people listen these days anymore. Just us talking garbage constantly.
I forgot that that's a Buzzsprout
Limitation. Yeah. Angelo, tell us about the games that you're playing.
I did not erase.
You're playing the Star Wars Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I just saw the Star Wars colon.
Tell us about this new game.
No, I played the original. Sorry, Final Fantasy 1 Pixel Remaster on the Steam Deck, and it was fine. It's that game like pretty much has no story until you get to the very end. When you get to the boss, you get to Chaos, and he's like, "Oh, I'm from the future, and this happened." It's like, oh, okay, well, like none of this was ever like alluded to in the last like 18 hours that I've been playing this game.
If you want the story, you have to play the Strangers of Paradise Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, I'm actually planning on doing that at some point. I hear it's terrible. It's going to be great. But yeah, like it is okay. I'm kind of looking forward to just going through the Pixel Remaster series because I really want to get to 6 because everyone goes on about 6 being so fantastic. So I'm working my way through it. I remember playing 4 on the DS back in the day, the 3D remake. Halfway through, but I think I got to a point where it just got really hard all of a sudden and then I just stopped playing it, which is a bit of a shame. But yeah, enjoying that. I'm also playing Octopath Traveler 1 as well. Really enjoying that one. That's pretty fun. I've got like 5 of the Octopathers so far. But also playing... got back into God of War Ragnarok. I don't know, like... I got the game at launch and we dipped into it around launch time, but I just wasn't feeling it back then. And I'm playing it again and I'm still kind of not feeling it. I don't know what it is about this game. Like, I really...
What is wrong with you? I love it so much.
And like, I'm not saying that like the game is bad necessarily or anything like that. It just feels way too similar to the original. And yeah, I'm just playing this game where it's like, it's just not scratching any itch whatsoever.
It scratched many itches for me, and I'm so sad that it ended. And I want another one like right now, but I know it's not going to happen for a long time. Yeah, and I'm sad.
See, I'm the itchiest dude, you know, that ever lived, and is not scratching anything. So
they've got creams for that now, Angelo.
Oh, sure. Anyway, that's me.
Luke, tell us about your achievement.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I was there, you know, a month and a half ago, and I just kept putting it off because I'm like, I don't really want to do it because it's not going to matter. But I finally got around to beating Ganondorf in Tears of the Kingdom. And I knew it would do it, and it pisses me off that Nintendo still do it. But, you know, you beat the game, and then it just puts you back to the last save point before the boss fight. And, you know, now the threat is still in the world. And it's like, come on, guys, there's hundreds of things that I could still do in this game without him being, you know, around. But you're just not letting me do it. I remember Fallout 3 did that. They just ended it. And then if you didn't want that, you had to. Had to be like, and then in one of the DLCs, they undid that and they put an open ending in there.
They just did like a hard end to the game and everyone hated it. And they just stuck with it for like a year and a half until they finally released that DLC that let you continue the story. That was so good.
But other than that, the other stuff I've been playing, I played some Mario Kart, the new tracks. But mostly it's just stuff for previews that I can't talk about. So.
Nice. I'll go next. So I've been playing a bunch of things because I've been on holiday from work this past week, so had a lot of free time. So I've been playing Song Pop Party. It's a music trivia game. I just, you know, it was cheap on the eShop, thought I'd pick it up. It plays like clips of songs and then you have multiple choice to like quickly identify it and you compete against other people to do so. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, I'm a big music person, so that kind of thing is very much my jam. I've been playing the Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition, which is something that I'm playing kind of for work and also just because I think it's a neat little thing that exists. So I do plan on writing about that eventually, but the Pocket Edition is like a sort of like weird demake of Final Fantasy XV, and I'd like it a lot, maybe more than the original Final Fantasy XV, it's hard to say.
Does it come with a branded noodles segment in there?
It doesn't, no. It doesn't have any of the...
Cup noodles?
The promo yeah.
Cup noodles, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it has most of the stuff that the main game has. Like, the combat system is, like, fairly similar. You know, the story is all there. It's all voice acted because they just took the voice lines from the real game. Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's also not open world, so it feels a lot more like a traditional Final Fantasy game. Which is good, because Final Fantasy XV's open world didn't really do anything for it. But also I picked up at EB Games for quite cheap the Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm Final Bar line, which I just like unlocked the Final Fantasy 15 tracks and then played through that. I've just like been on a big Final Fantasy 15 kick. And then Apex Legends, that's another thing I'm playing for work. So that's fun. I mean, it's my first time really playing, getting into Apex, and I'm enjoying it. It's, I don't know, I don't really like online multiplayer games like that, so it's got a learning curve. Now the other one, I just started this today, is the remake of the first Star Ocean game, which is Star Ocean First Departure R. Because the second one got announced, and then I was like, wow, I'll buy this game. It's only like $32. It's not that big of a deal. And then like literally like 8 hours after I bought it, it went on sale for like $12 on the eShop. And I was like, what the hell is this, man? So yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's fun so far though. The music is an absolute banger. Michael, tell us what you're playing.
I haven't played shit. I've taken a big break off games for a while. Like, to be honest, I haven't been inspired to play anything. So, I don't know. Been catching up on some TV and movies and stuff and focusing on that. But I'll finally get back into something at some point, for sure.
I mean, Pikmin 4 is just around the corner, so...
I know.
I have to say, I've been playing the Splinter Cells on stream, and I just finished off the third one.
I was watching you shoot out some lights the other day. I didn't say hello, I was just creeping in stream.
I was creeping around on stream, so it's fine. But yeah. It just reminded me because I watched the final season of Jack Ryan. I finished that off on Amazon Prime the other day too. So
nice.
I'm a big Tom Clancy fan. So
nice. All right, let's move into Nintendo 20 questions. So Michael, you're leading this one, even though you told everyone that it was Luke.
Definitely didn't, you know, not realize it was me and tell people that it was Luke and have to think of one right as we're starting the episode and write all the notes and get everything ready for it. Anyway, I'm good to go.
All right, well, we'll start with our usual question. Was this game released on or after the 1st of January 2000?
2000, yes, it was.
Okay.
So it was released on the 1st of January 2000.
On or after?
You know, was it released on or after the 1st of January 2010?
It was not.
Okay. I guess it's a decade to work with.
I mean, was this game released on a Nintendo home console?
It was not.
Okay, so it's Game Boy.
DS.
Yeah.
Do you play as a human in this game?
You do play as a human in this game.
Okay.
Do we classify Mario as a human?
I mean, I would, but...
I mean, he lives in Brooklyn. Yep. We've seen his parents and all that now, so...
We don't know that he's human. He doesn't look like anybody else than that. In that film, so
in the movie, yeah, he does.
Yeah, I mean, no, vaguely. I mean, he looks like a weird, short little man.
He's got no butt. Humans have butts.
Yeah, that's true.
He's human like.
All right, I'll just like narrow down the platform. Was this game released on the Game Boy Advance?
This game was not released on the Game Boy Advance.
Okay, so DS, which had 6 million releases.
Was this game published by Nintendo?
Yes.
I thought your stream had frozen for a second there, Michael.
Yeah, same.
No.
Like, cut it.
Look, I'll make it slightly easy. It was published by Nintendo in a region.
So, wait, did we decide that, or did we find out that it is that on a handheld system? Is that a question?
It is. So it's Nintendo DS, 100%.
Okay, so it's DS.
Published by Nintendo in some regions, maybe.
And I'd laugh if it's like Tony Hawk on DS and Nintendo published it in Japan and nowhere else.
Yeah.
Does this game have multiplayer?
No.
Mm-hmm.
A DS game without...
Oh, I've not been taking down questions. Oh, God.
I have been.
Okay, what are we up to?
That was question number 7.
All right, so we have 12 left. No,
12 questions and a guess.
So yes. A few Mario games came out without multiplayer on the DS.
Yeah, but Nintendo would have published them in all regions.
That's true.
Were there any Mario DS games that didn't have multiplayer?
I can't think of any off the top of my head. Oh, the like Bowser's Inside Story and stuff, the RPG ones.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Was this game developed in North America?
No. Ooh, no. Had a small stroke. Then I was like, wait, are they? And they're not. No, definitely not. I was like, well, I don't know why I even thought. Once you find out who it is, you'll be like, why did I even think about that?
I was going to ask like an extremely specific genre question, but that's probably not the best idea.
Go for it.
Is this a point-and-click adventure game?
Oh, man. Oh. No. No. Oh, man. That's a really hard question to answer.
Is it because of the nature of the game itself or because it's on the DS?
Both.
Okay.
Okay, so my...
I'm going to say no. I don't think anyone would classify this as a point-and-click adventure.
As in, like, typical of the genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so my thought there was, like, Hotel Dusk, because it was developed by...
Yeah, no. Okay. If you're like, basing it on that, definitely not. Yeah.
Okay.
And the way that he sort of described it and then about the publishing, it makes me think it might be like a Layton game.
It certainly could be Layton. I don't think... Were any of them published by Nintendo?
Nintendo published them in Australia.
Or did they publish them there or did they distribute them? Because there's a difference.
No, they published. Level 5 did them in Japan and North America. I don't know about Europe.
Is this game a puzzle game?
No.
Okay, well, definitely,
definitely not Layton then.
There are also just a lot of puzzle games on the DS too.
Mm. Yeah. Good point.
Was this game... Sorry, is the developer of this game still in business today?
Yes.
It's a good one.
Is this a licensed game?
No.
So I'm thinking it might be something that was like made in Europe and like published by Majesco or some random company like that everywhere except Japan when Nintendo published it.
Is there something like a Scribblenauts? Would you classify that as a puzzle game? That's a hard one. It's a very genre-bendy kind of game.
Scribblenauts is an interesting... Yeah.
I mean, it's technically puzzle-like because you've got to come up with options to solve it, but...
You come up with a solution,
when you look at it, it's more platformer than puzzle.
Yeah. You're definitely finding solutions, but I wouldn't say that they're puzzles. Puzzles usually have, like, a finite amount of ways that you're supposed to solve something.
Yeah, I can't even remember the name of the developer for that one now. Fifth Cell.
Yeah, Fifth Cell.
Yeah. So still in business, Nintendo published in one region, not a puzzle game, not a point and click, on the DS, and you play as a human.
I can confirm some of those things.
Thank you for the confirmation.
And there's no multiplayer.
And it's no multiplayer, licensed. Yeah.
It's on the DS. We could ask something to do with the DS controls.
Yeah, but what?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to work out. Like, we could ask something about the touchscreen, whether or not I had traditional controls, like if it was a platformer. Like, I guess it's kind of hard to say, right? The platformers that use the touchscreen, there were some that just use regular controls.
I can't think of any non-puzzle games that were exclusively touchscreen controlled outside of like Sonic RPG from BioWare.
I don't necessarily mean like exclusively controlled, like they disabled the touchscreen. I just mean like a primary control. Like I'm thinking like New Super Mario Brothers. Like you played with traditional controls and then you could use the touchscreen to do certain things.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you guys have played the game. I think you would have. At least one of you.
Could I ask if you reviewed well?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know. Let's have a look.
Well, I'll ask. Did the game review well? Like, would you consider it a favorable... It has favorable opinions.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that an official question or a freebie? I'll let you guys decide.
That's official. I think that's official.
Okay.
So we know it wasn't a stinker. Like, it wasn't just some random game. It was a game of note.
The only thing that I'm sort of stuck on is like maybe some DS stuff from Rare, because THQ published almost all of that, but I don't know if they published it in Japan. But the only DS stuff I can think of is like Diddy Kong Racing DS and Viva Pinata DS.
We didn't get the region, did we? You just asked if it was US and you said no. We haven't got Japan or Europe.
No, I said developed in North America.
Yeah, and
that's what I'm thinking, like Rare.
I mean, he said that it was published by Nintendo in a region.
In a region, which makes me think it was published by them in Japan.
Well, I was going to say, that doesn't mean that we can't ask if it was also published by someone else.
No, I know that.
So we could ask if it was like Capcom or EA or something like that.
Well, it wouldn't be any Japanese publisher. There's no way that Nintendo would publish a game for them in Europe but not anywhere else.
Well, sure. There were some games that are like for a lot of like Square Enix games were like published by Nintendo worldwide but done by Square Enix in Japan.
Yeah. I'm thinking the inverse on that, where it's published by Nintendo in Japan but published. The only company I can think of that did that was THQ. And that was because they were publishing the Rare stuff from because Microsoft owned them at that point.
Look at Michael. Look at him just looking so damn chuffed.
I generally didn't think this is going to be super difficult, but like, I guess DS makes it harder because there's just 7 trillion games.
I just don't think we've committed to a direction, that's all. So.
Yeah. How many questions do we have left?
6 questions, and I guess.
Like, we know quite a bit, like in a broad sense.
Yeah.
Like I said, we just got to pick a direction.
I mean, we can ask if it has, like, any recognizable Nintendo characters in it. Like Mario, Pikachu, whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah. Go for it.
Yeah, okay. Does this game have any recognizable Nintendo characters in it?
As far as I'm aware, no.
Okay. That doesn't help me, but...
It's not a
Pokemon. I certainly don't remember them when I played through.
Just trying to think, you know, the playable as a human play as a human character makes me think it's an RPG or like a platformer or something. I mean, obviously that would exclude like racing games.
Well, that excludes racing games.
Well, you're generally just a car in most DS racing games. Like Ridge Racer DS, you're a car. And
theoretically, there's still a person in that car, though.
Well, but like, if you're a character, like, you know, F-Zero, I would argue that you play as a human.
Obviously, yeah, I suppose.
On DS, but yeah.
Has this game been released on any other platforms?
Oh, God, I don't think so. Doing this game specifically?
Yes, the one that we are talking about currently.
No. As far as I can see, no, it has not.
Is this game part of a series?
Yes. That's two questions. Three questions and a guess left.
This is difficult.
Yeah. Mm.
Part of a series.
What if it's like a Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games kind of thing?
Yeah, but Sega published that all those in Japan.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, right? And Nintendo published them outside of Japan.
Yeah, but we know Nintendo only published this game in one region.
Yeah.
Did you say one region, or okay. Did you say at least one?
And you also asked if it contained any recognizable Nintendo characters.
This may be too much of a hint, but I just want to clarify a question from earlier about has this game released on other consoles? There's no way, like, this. The answer to this question is a bit complicated because there has been a remake of the game released on another console, but it does not have the same name.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a zombie U to zombie thing.
Part of it is the same. Some of it isn't.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, so it probably just has DS in the title.
No, it isn't like that.
So that's literally the zombie U to zombie thing. Zombie U is a Wii U launch game, and then they just ported it years
it
later.
Feels
and
like
it zombie.
More different than like zombie to zombie U. Maybe. I don't know.
No, I get that. I'm just saying, in terms of scenario, that's the sort of thing he's saying is.
For some reason, I just got like Feel the Magic / Project Rub stuck in my head.
I've not thought about that game one. In so long. Holy crap.
I thought about that one.
What a weird game, right? Like, wasn't there like a mini game where you had to like wipe crabs off some woman or something like that?
I remember you had to blow into the DS microphone for something to do with a candle.
Do you remember like, so many games had you blow into that thing.
Man, I really hope some of you guys have played this game. Maybe you haven't. Maybe I'm misremembering. God, I got no idea.
It's not a licensed game. It's part of a series. Has no multiplayer.
Developer is still in business.
I'll just ask one of my usual ones. Does this game have combat in it?
No, I wouldn't say what you'd traditionally call combat, no.
Okay.
Okay. How many questions do we have left?
Two questions, I guess.
So, it doesn't have combat in it. It's not a puzzle game. It does have multiplayer, so presumably it's not a racer.
Or a fighter.
Or a fighter. So, like, what kind of game would there be? It has to be, like, a platformer in that case.
Yeah, I'm thinking 2D platformers, but I can't think of any that feature a thing. Like, I mean, I don't think...
I'll give you a slight hint. I'll be very surprised if you get the genre.
Okay.
Is
it, like, a drawing... Could it be, like, a drawing game, kind of like a Kirby's Canvas Curse or something like that?
Yeah, but you play as a human. Technically, in those games, you play as a paintbrush.
Sure, but I'm just saying, like, could it be something like that where you're manipulating the world around the character?
What about, like, Drawn to Life?
I thought Drawn to Life as well. That popped in my head.
But that's a THQ arguably, game, right? Yeah.
Was that in a series?
I was going to point out that with three questions, or two questions and a guess left, it's probably a perfect time to drop that meta question.
Yeah, I was just about to say we should ask that question.
Could it be Scribblenauts?
I don't know if Scribblenauts was ever published by Nintendo.
It got a lot of hype.
WB Games published the later entries everywhere, but I don't know about Japan.
Okay, well, let's ask the meta question, just to so we know, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Have we mentioned this game?
You have not mentioned this game.
Why would you ask?
Because that means we're not doubling down on things that we think we've got.
To be fair, that's probably the most helpful thing that you guys have done.
Yeah.
Damn, all right, so it's not Scribblenauts.
See, the other thing too is like the whole, is there combat in the game knocks out other things. Like there was like an Assassin's Creed game that was made in the UK for DS. That clearly has combat in it. But the whole, I'm still stuck on the point and click things. Like you wouldn't think it's that, is what he said. But the way he used humming and haring means it might have some elements in there.
No, he said as a traditional,
got some elements, but like no one would ever call it a point and click adventure game.
Like, no, I get that, but I'm just trying to think now what games might have like interacting.
Pretty much all DS games, right? Like that was the whole conceit of the DS, is that you would touch things, you would point and tap on them. So I think that's kind of like where it gets muddy.
Yeah.
Like Zelda, Phantom Hourglass is entirely touch control. Yeah. I wouldn't call that a point and click game.
Yeah. It's also somewhat well received as part of a series.
It's not a puzzle game, right? We know that, right?
Yeah, we know it's not a puzzle game.
So I was thinking like Panel de Pon, because that had a weird name on DS, but
that's we've had it. Elite Beat Agents. I wouldn't play as any humans in that game.
I love Elite Beat Agents. What a great game.
So do I, man.
We've also had that.
Such a banger.
I'd put that game in the same level of, like this game, the same level of that as how much I enjoy it on DS. Like, it's that. Okay. For me, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm going to tap out on this one. I got no idea.
I feel bad. I generally didn't think it was going to be hard at all.
Okay, what are the chances that like Michael is like a secret fan of like the Style Savvy series? Right, because like
were they DS or 3DS?
The first one was on DS.
I think I've mentioned this game in the past, and I'm pretty sure I've said I enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure anyway. I could be wrong, but I will say this isn't like Wizard of Oz game level of like randomness. Like not even close.
I think we're just gonna throw some questions out there and end this because.
Yeah, we'll one question that. And a guess. Anything you can think that will help you narrow it down. Could be publisher, could be developer.
Yeah. I keep cycling back to Rare, but I don't. Was this game published outside of Japan by THQ?
No.
Okay.
Got a guess.
Okay, so like it's a puzzle game. I got nothing. I have truly, truly nothing.
Yep. I got nothing as well. Throw a game out there, Luke.
Yeah, it looks good. It's a random, like, bullshit guess and probably land, like, a perfect guess on there.
Hail Mary.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty sure there was a Dead Rising game on DS, but...
Go on.
It's definitely not that, though, because that has combat in it. There's not some random Tomb Raider game on DS that I'm forgetting or anything.
No, because you see, it appeared on another platform later with a different ish name. Oh, I just had a thought.
calls it dangerous.
I was thinking, like, maybe it's like Harvest Moon on DS, because that's called Story of Seasons now. But it usually uses the subtitles.
Go on then.
I don't know what the DS one was called. Maybe it was just Harvest Moon DS. Yeah, do you know, sure. Why not? I mean, we have nothing else, right?
Yeah, go for it.
Sure. Up to you. Was this game Harvest Moon DS?
Okay.
So, I want to throw out. I was thinking My Sims at the end there.
Okay.
My Sims. Okay.
So, developed by Atlas.
Oh,
and published by Atlas in Japan and in the USA, and published by Nintendo in Europe, and I'm assuming Australia. Actually, I have no idea who published in Australia. And released in 2005 in Japan and the USA, but 2006 in Europe. This game follows Derek Stiles as a young doctor who discovers his mystical healing touch, and the team at Caduceus. As they try to save patients from the disease guilt. This game is Trauma Center Under the Knife for Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
I honestly only ever think of that series as
So I'm glad I was like so worried as I'm going through it. Like, did I pick something completely like am I misremembering how like influential this game was?
No. That's
a really good one, yeah.
That was a great one. I like that one.
I love Trauma Center. Like, absolutely love it.
It's very, very good, yeah.
And yes, it was remade for the Nintendo Wii under as Trauma Center Second Opinion.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I enjoy Trauma Center so much that I started last November making up fake box art for an April Fool's joke this year to be a Trauma Center game theme to mash the TV show.
Oh, man. It's one of those games that like I would love to have like another game of, but only if I could use a stylus. Like I do not like the Wii motion control version of it. It, you know, I'm sure some people got used to it. I couldn't. But I don't know.
Didn't it have a sequel on the DS or on the
It did, yeah. I don't know.
I'm surprised that like there haven't been any spiritual successes that another like indie studio has made or something on Steam. Maybe there
it feels like you see what I mean about combat, like it's not really combat, but it sort of is combat, and like it isn't really a point and click adventure, but like you can certainly see how some people might like slot it in that type of like genre. It's like simulation, visual novel, like
it's more like an operating sim or something like that.
See, I was thinking Trauma Team on the Wii. That was the original one, and then they did according to Wikipedia, they did a port of the first DS game to Wii later on.
Yeah, Second Opinion. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember like Disaster Day of Crisis?
Yes, that game was a disaster.
That was an odd thing Nintendo made.
Man, I gotta play Trauma Center again after talking about this. Like this game rules. It's so good.
I never actually played it myself. My mum had it. I remember that. She only had like a couple of games when she was trying to get into DS stuff. And she had it and she played it for a bit and she enjoyed it, but I never got around to playing it. I gotta pick that
up. It is super fun. Like
Yeah.
Awesome. Great, like the story is bonkers, like absolutely crazy. Like there's terrorist groups, it's just wild. And, you know, like insane viruses that are like mutating and semi-sentient. It's just nuts.
I mean, we could get a Switch port of it because they remember when Brain Age came to Switch, they included a stylus.
They did.
You could definitely do it. It would, you could, it'll work.
Dude, I've never been excited about a loss before. That was a really good one.
Yeah, I'm glad. That was great. Like, I don't feel like it was really bullshit. Good. We all knew what that game was. Dude just didn't follow the right threads. Right.
I'm glad. I'm glad I didn't overhype it by saying that. Like, I think you guys should know this.
Yeah. I genuinely... Oh, I'm going to put a question out there. I genuinely want to know if any of our listeners actually was in that ballpark at all.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there would have been a couple, but yeah. Hit us up on the Vooks Discord and let us know if you're being genuine.
I was laughing at when Luke said, oh, yeah, like if it's a Nintendo, they wouldn't have published it in Europe. And I'm like,
that's what I got stuck on. Because I've seen it before where, you know, games get developed outside of Japan and they get published by a company. But then when they get taken to Japan, because of the whole restrictions on non-Japanese companies, you know, operating there, this was, well, Nintendo would have published a game in Japan but not published it elsewhere if it was made by another company. So that's what threw me. I got stuck on that.
I was reading the Wikipedia article about it. Supposedly it was a total commercial disappointment for Japan. And like it was just a massive success in like the English speaking country, well, like in Europe and in North America, and totally boosted Atlas's profits for that year. I'm like, I would never have guessed that. That's wild.
Strange.
Especially because it feels like the kind of game that Japan would go nuts for, right? Like,
totally.
Especially like with the wild story and like VN elements and stuff.
But I guess there were a lot of like medical dramas at the time, though. House was big at the time. ER was still on TV. Grey's Anatomy.
Chicago Hope.
Grey's Anatomy was big at the time. Grey's Anatomy is still going.
But that was like the height of like medical dramas at the time. So it kind of makes sense that it was.
I love Grey's. It's my secret weakness.
so if Atlas came back with Trauma Center 3, Grey's Anatomy, you'd just like pass
I'd
out.
I'd so play that.
All right. Well, we've been recording for such a long time now, so we'd better wrap up. Be sure to visit the site www.vooks.net for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on all of the things at vooks.net, which is all spelled out. Or jump on over to our Discord at bit.ly/VooksDiscord, especially if you knew that it was Trauma Center, because we want to hear about that. You can find all of our social information, links for the cover story, the stories covered in this episode, and, you know, more information in the episode notes on whatever platform you're listening to. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next fortnight.
Hey, Paisanos.